I've taken 5 minutes sanctuary to check that my computers and my cameras are all charged. Here is a cup of tea being placed delicately on the table in front of myself.
Lovely.
And
Al Baker.
What do you do?
I'm a photographer.
And have you got some stuff in the exhibition?
I have contributed some stuff to the exhibition. Some archivey stuff, really. Some sort of 10-year-old stuff. 10-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old stuff.
So what's your connection with the hip-hop scene in Manchester?
It all started, like a lot of people in Manchester for me, it started at the Hacienda. Started at, you know, watching live acts and listening to different styles of music than I'd previously been sort of into. I had friends that were into hip-hop, but I was never really into it myself, particularly until I started going out, hearing it in clubs. And there was stuff that I liked. I liked, you know, Run DMC, and I liked Public Enemy. Public Enemy were great. Digital Underground. But it wasn't really my favourite music until British people started making music.
Right. So how would you differentiate British hip hop compared to the US hip hop?
American hip hop, especially now, it's all about money and status. Whereas there tends to be a stronger songwriting tradition in England. And so people, even though they're writing rhymes and lyrics, they've still got stories behind them. And it's just listening to things, you know, like Tesco's and Asda's and eating beans and toast for tea and, you know, things that you can actually relate to. In the same way that listening to American rock music when they talk about flying down the freeway and all that
country.
Kind of thing.
Oh, country is just one long story. Not that I've ever heard any country, but I was trapped in a room once.
Yeah, exactly. And it felt like country.
So, what about accents? Is there a bit of a divide between British hip hop? Where
there used to be. I think like any form of music, I think the people who start it out often emulate the people that they've heard. And so I think it was kind of natural for a lot of the rappers in England in the sort of late 80s, early 90s to have an American twang and to kind of image themselves on those that came before.
So give me an example of a UK hip-hop artists that one...
That don't.
One that does, one that doesn't.
Oh, I wouldn't like to say the ones that do. Not many of them do.
Ones
anymore,
that don't, then.
Ones who don't. I mean, Black Twang. First sang about sort of eating beans on toast. Rodney P, in Witness, sings about sinking 10 pints of bitter. It's not a line you'd hear Jay-Z drop. Not, you know.
They probably think bitter lemon.
Yes, exactly. But, I mean, there are other connections. I mean, in Manchester, I remember being really impressed kind of in Madchester days. There was an MC around called MC Busby, Sean Braithwaite at the time. And I remember reading an interview with him before I'd even heard any of his music. And he was talking about lyrical influences, like how he was lyrically influenced by Morrissey, by reading the Smiths lyrics. And hearing a black rapper talking about reading Smiths lyrics in kind of like 1991 or something was kind of interesting. It was new. And it was obvious that a lot of people kind of stick in their genres. You know, hip-hop people will only listen to hip-hop records and they'll only sample other hip-hop records. And then this kind of genre eats itself and disappears. What you need is people to think outside the box. You know, you need hip-hop producers who listen to classical music and listen to songwriters and listen to the Beatles, you know, and who structure their songs differently. And those kind of different mashups of styles, that's what makes something new. And in Britain, I think it had something totally different. In Britain, there was a connection to punk with hip-hop in the fact that it was all kind of do-it-yourself, you know, knock over a couple of phone boxes and you've got enough money to put a record out kind of thing. And it was that kind of punk aesthetic of not wanting to go to London and take the big money from the big cheeses, but just do it for yourself.
So whereas in the US it's check me out, check out my car, look at how much cash I've got, look at all these women. And, okay, some of that must happen over here as well, but if it's realer and appears realer, are the artists realer? Is there a lot less front? Is there a lot less attitude?
I think so with the hip-hop generation, because I think again, there was a kind of two waves to it, and the second wave, it kind of came up in the middle of the sort of house, Hacienda, sort of ecstasy generation, where a lot of attitudes got kind of dropped.
Almost zero front there.
Well, I mean, it was no surprise that kind of when De La Soul came out with their Daisy Age kind of concept, that Manchester loved it, and, you know, it was kind of taken to heart here, because that's exactly the kind of same vibe that was going on in Manchester at the time. And it was kind of ego-less and brag-less, and it was all about, you know, joining together and doing something collective, as opposed to sort of keeping everything for yourself.
So how much of this period were you taking photographs? Were you documenting?
The early part of it, I wasn't. I started photographing in the early 90s. And a lot of it, again, had to do with parties that I used to go to and bands that I used to know. There was a big chunk of that, sort of 3 or 4 years of that part of my life that I've got no photographs of and very sketchy memories of. And I wished I'd been into my photography earlier, you know. And I kind of determined, after I'd moved out of this house that I'd shared with these two bands and I'd not photographed at all, that I was never going to do that again. I was never, wherever I was going to live, I was going to photograph it and document it. And I kind of I moved to Hume, which was an area in Manchester being urbanly, you know, regenerated, and sort of started documenting that as a piece of history. And through that, kind of got into graffiti artists who were using this sort of, the derelict buildings as like a canvas, and kind of got into through the graffiti artists, got into going to the sort of hip hop parties, and I suppose slowly, eventually, just sort of got the confidence up to sort of go and photograph them. And I've been photographing now for like 10 years around Manchester City Centre, and I went through the kind of MC culture right through jungle, drum and bass, and I'm into dubstep sort of nights that I'm still photographing now.
Where can people go to see your stuff? Is there anywhere online?
I kind of gave up a few years ago trying to get my stuff published and trying to get my stuff paid for, but I didn't give up taking the photographs, didn't give up doing it. I just trying to turn it into a living. And I just used to do it at the weekends. And since then, so the past 5 or 6 years, it's all just been kind of amassing in a big box under my bed.
Well, I'll tell you, we'll have a chat after I finish this chat with you now, and I'll tell you exactly how I think you should go about. Don't think so much as selling the images. Think about sharing the images to plug you, yeah, your knowledge and what you do.
At the moment, I mean, I've just started to set up my website so I can actually start showing this stuff.
So what will that be called if someone wants to save it right now in their favourites to check back later?
It'll be called albakerphotography.com. Simple as.
Brilliant. And you got much on the walls here that we can go and have a look at?
I've got about 2 dozen pictures nice. Up on the walls, and as far as I know.
I've probably seen them already. I've been looking around, stealing stuff, posting it to the net.
Lovely.
I can go back and tag it later with your name. Thank you very much, Al. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome, mate.